Radio.
The Cathedral of Bee. The reenchantment of the world through the writings of St. John Paul II, Pope Emeritus Benedict, and Pope Francis. A talk by Dr. Robert Tilley for Scholarship in the Cathedral.
And really, I guess what this series started out of was Father Richard Umbers broaching the idea of a kind of cathedral schools, cathedral education. That is, universities, higher education used to be centered around the cathedral. And consequently, what I'm going to try and do is bring those themes together with what is my major theme, that is enchantment. And I ought to begin with a little bit of a warning here, and it's very important. Some people, when they talk of enchantment, will think of things like seeking out fairyland and things to do with elves and griffins and dragons, wizards and gnomish tricksters, magic and wishes, that kind of stuff. Here's a very important point for you. It's actually a very important point. According to the folk tales, if you ever do by chance find yourself in fairyland, they may seem cute, but the folk tales all warn that you should neither eat nor drink anything that's offered to you. If you do, you'll be stuck there. So that's a warning. And you'll thank me for that in the future if you ever do find yourself in fairyland. But the interesting thing as well about fairyland is I think in our modern age we tend to think of, as I say, fairies and elves and such, and they all seem cute. But in fact, all the folk tales and the ancient myths hold that they are often malicious. Malicious. In other words, fairyland as well is likewise fallen. Often we think things that are cute and ethereal have to do with enchantment, as if it's a kind of wispy world made up of clouds, as if the world above is somehow less solid than the world down here below. What I mean by that is that when people think of enchantment, I think they often in the modern world do think about things like wispy clouds and ethereal matters. In other words, things that in a sense lack solidity. But in a sense, in a proper sense, compared to heaven, we are the things that lack solidity. We are the things that are ethereal. In other words, it's the other way around. Contrary to the idea that in heaven, the idea of clouds, well, that's not actually the vision that the scriptures present for that matter. In Revelation chapter 21, 9 to 21, when the new Jerusalem comes down out of heaven, it is described in a properly enchanting way, but it's opposite to being wispy and ethereal. In fact, the new Jerusalem is made up of things so solid that they are sharp. In fact, the new Jerusalem is made up of diamonds, gems, sapphires, as I say, things hard, things that are solid. And in a way, the painting behind me is a good representation. The sense of the above, the heavenly with the earthly, the below. If you look at that, the representation of the above is just as solid, maybe even more solid than that which is below. The colors themselves are, in fact, deeper and richer, and that's brought out by the very deep blue behind. The deep blue behind is not meant to make it look wispy. It is actually to bring to prominence the solidity of our Lord and our Lady. And that's the Christian sense of enchantment, where the above and the below come together. There is a harmony of the two registers. The temptation this side of the fall is to succumb to what John Paul II, Benedict XVI, and now Pope Francis have referred to as a new Gnosticism. Now, Gnosticism, classically, was the idea that matter was per se evil. And the Gnostics, in the second century AD and onwards, had this kind of system in which that which was higher had nothing whatsoever to do with flesh or matter. It was a Christian heresy. And in fact, they argued that Jesus didn't really have true flesh. In a sense, with Gnosticism, what it displays is a hatred towards existence, a hatred of solidity, a hatred, in fact, of matter. And as I say, John Paul II, Benedict, and now Francis have referred to this new Gnosticism, by which they mean, as I say, a veiled hatred of God's creation, of matter, even a veiled hatred of flesh, a wish, in fact, to be rid, to be quit of matter. Indeed, in this day and age, to find a home in the manufactured virtual world. In other words, our technology that creates an ethereal realm that is free of friction. Because it's free of solidity, it is free of friction, it is free of mediation, free of waiting, in fact. It is magical. It is like fairyland, where everything you will wish for will suddenly appear, courtesy of Google Glasses or whatever new latest development comes along. In virtual world, as soon as you want something and you wish it, it will appear. Enchantment is not meaning and magic. Enchantment is meaning and being. Magic is the opposite to meaning, because magic is of the soul of manipulation. Both John Paul II and Benedict argued in their writings and in their encyclicals concerning the problem of humanity falling under what they have called, quote, a technocratic logic, that's in Faith and Reason in 1998, what John Paul called a technocratic logic, that through this, as Benedict took up in his book in the beginning, through this is the idea, quote, that we can manipulate all to, quote, seize control of the world and to dominate the world by subjecting it to our technocratic mathematical logic. And mathematics, ultimately, is the logic of abstraction. It is this kind of Gnostic logic that Benedict argued despises existence. It expresses, quote, a disenchantment with creation. A disenchantment with creation. As John Paul II noted in the Gospel of Life, informing the culture of death, that which he called the culture of death, is, quote, a new Gnosticism. Elsewhere he writes how everything, including human nature, has become devoid of, quote, given reality. Human nature, like everything else, becomes, quote, a product of our thought, able to be freely formed and changed. In other words, everything becomes subject to our magic-like wishes. That's in his book, Memory and Identity. Both John Paul II and Benedict XVI argued that this new Gnosticism, in which the very solidity, the very givenness of material identity is replaced by plasticity and malleability, this new Gnosticism is based, as both of them argued again and again, this new Gnosticism is based on a rejection of classical metaphysics, especially Thomistic metaphysics. And because of that, everything becomes inessential. That is why essentialism in a lot of contemporary philosophy is a bad word. You don't want to be called an essentialist because apparently essentialism is something restrictive and not free, and thus we are free of metaphysics. In other words, to be free is to be free of any confinement, which means free of any essence or any nature, such that we can become anything of what, 52 different genders. Because even sexuality, biological sex, is manipulable. Everything becomes virtual and plastic. Everything becomes inessential. Hence, our technology answers to this and furthers it, and we fall under its spell. And that in fairyland is exactly what will often happen, according to the folk tales, that those who enter within and eat and drink there, so remember, don't eat and drink there, everybody who goes there and falls under the spell ends up being dominated by that which they thought they were going to dominate. Technology answers to this and furthers it, and it is computer technology. And this is tied up with what is called the transhumanist hope of a cyborg singularity. In the 1990s, the Transhumanist Association, which actually had the patronage of the then President Bill Clinton, the Transhumanist Society actually aims to overcome the limitations of being human. And the idea is to go for the singularity, in which a cyborg state in which biology and computers merge into one, and many of them argue for a singularity, which is where we have a hive mind, as many call it. Whether or not that is possible is by the point. The point is, it expresses a fundamental nihilistic aim, a Gnostic aim. The virtual world becomes and replaces the real world. Again, in his book, Faith and Reason, John Paul II argued that the rise to dominance of this technology, a technology allied to our free market capitalist economy, such that through information technology, nanotechnology, genetic manipulation, in other words, eugenics, all becomes plastic. And John Paul argued, quote, this is tied, quote, to a market-based logic. A market-based logic. The virtual world is the capitalist consumerist world made complete. And in the Gospel of Life, John Paul II referred to this as, quote, everything is negotiable. Everything is open to bargaining. The values of being, he wrote, are replaced by those of having. In his encyclical Redeemer of Man in 1979, he said, humanity, quote, seems to see no other meaning in his natural environment than that which serves for immediate use and consumption. In other words, everything now starts to be seen as what going to fulfill our immediate wishes, like magic, like fairyland. There is a paradox at the heart of all of this, and it's a really great paradox. The modern world in the 16th, 17th century, when it cut itself off from the church, from the Catholic faith, bracketed out metaphysics, bracketed out transcendence, and it in fact claimed, many started to claim, not least via the recovery of Lucretius, that they were materialistic, that they believed in materialism. And this is the paradox. As modernity has progressed, it actually has lost the very sense of matter. By cutting itself off from the faith, from the church, it is in fact cut itself off from a true materialism. All matter loses its solidity, its very there-ness. It loses its bulk and place, its very heaviness. In short, the assertion of materialism has ended in a loss of the sense of materiality. And so we end up with the irony that it is the popes, that it is the church, that actually defends matter against a new Gnosticism. It is a defense of matter itself. It's a defense of substance, of essence, of solid identity. We might even say that it is the church that defends friction and gravity against this new Gnosticism. The church is defending the world against its descent into the virtual world of sentimental, cheesy, blue eco-avatars, where a world of standardized plasticity, of upbeat smiles and happy faces. The birth of modernity is often described, at least since people like Weber and Durkheim, is described as the loss of enchantment, and so it is, because modernity was a separation of meaning and being, such that being becomes matter, but then matter becomes mere stuff, and now it's just become immaterial. Matter is no longer meaningful. It's stuff to be shaped by the market demands. And the market, our economic system, our free market neoliberal system is predicated upon the notion that it should meet and it should encourage and it should tempt you in all your base desires so that every little wish of yours can be met immediately. This is the world we are in. In fact, we are in fairyland. In the folk tales, however, the hero or the heroine would be tempted by every desire but would resist. That is enchantment, resistance. Rather than succumb to where wishes would be granted. And here's where I want to draw a very important distinction, and it's a very telling distinction. Fairyland is not enchantment. It is glamour. It is glamour. You see, the word glamour originally referred to the effect of a spell. That's where the term a glamour comes from. One fell under an allurement, was seduced into a state of existence where one was in a drug-like state, vacant and unable to reason, one's will controlled by other forces. Sound familiar? That is our world. Celebrity culture is quite correctly called glamour. Celebrity culture is the clearest power of capitalism as it works to strip all of substance, to remove all essence, and thus a superficial stardom where people become, quite consciously and avowedly, a brand to be marketed. Glamour is the spell of fairyland, and matter is made immaterial, made friction-free. As I say, enchantment is its opposite. It is hard, not ethereal. It's like the New Jerusalem made out of diamonds and sapphires. Enchantment demands discipline, an overcoming of oneself, and that is the very theme of many of the great folk tales and fairy tales of the heroes and heroines, insofar as they resisted the temptation, they overcame the temptation. And that overcoming temptation, what else does that mean? But it's overcoming of yourself, a refusing to eat the food of fairyland. Enchantment is to embrace friction. It is to fight the wizards and witches of glamour. It is to kill the dragons that lurk in fairyland. With glamour, everything seems easy. Everything is effortless. One is free from obedience to codes of morality or dogmatic teaching. It's like liberal theological dissidence. Anything goes. Under the idea of making it relevant, it just becomes another theme of fairyland, another branch of capitalism. In other words, glamour is to be free from restricting essence. One can be whatever one wants to be, and yet again, the paradox is, of course, as we all know, all those people who say, I have to be free to me, always end up being exactly like the celebrity culture. Like the glamoured celebrities. In glamour, the world is virtual, Technology will provide every answer to your desire by manufacturing an avatar that will fulfill your fantasies. This is our glamorous world, 24/7 immediacy, where no other real human need mediate an answer to your passion. It is, if you pardon the term, technologically facilitated masturbation. No wonder pornography is a major seller on the internet. As Marx said of capitalism, all that is solid melts into the air. All that is sacred is profaned. All that is solid melts into air. All that is sacred is profaned. And as glamour spread, as a free market ideology seeps into every pore, humanity itself becomes a commodity, hence a culture of death, hence abortion, hence fetal and embryonic stem cell research, hence IVF, hence what you, even the Sydney Morning Herald, dared to publish the other week, the use of fetuses to burn as waste in order to save certain money in hospitals in England. That is fairyland. Some of the best works that bring this out are actually by non-Christian writers, and that should be a shame to Christian writers. Michel Houellebecq, an atheist writer, in his work Atomized, paints a picture of a transhumanist world and actually argues, he's an atheist, that it was in the 1960s with contraception, the pill and abortion, that humanity started to dissolve into nothing at all. And then with the transhumanist hope, all humanity now dies. Or Bret Easton Ellis's, I think, prophetic works like American Psycho, in which he rubs our society's face in it. American Psycho begins with Patrick Bateman seeing a piece of graffiti which says, "Abandon all hope, ye who enter here," which anyone who's read Dante surely should know are the words written on the gate of hell. Roberto Bolaño in 2666 noted before the section in which, of hundreds of pages in which he detailed the records of the murders of women in Juarez and Mexico tied up with the drug cartels, a drug cartel business that the liberal bourgeoisie here in our culture in America supports by smoking dope and taking cocaine and so forth. As he notes that those murders begin with a sacrophobe, a man who is going around desecrating churches. Bret Easton Ellis, in his first work, Lesson Zero, which in his last work, Imperial Bedrooms, takes up, notes that which is coming to fill the void. And what it is Satan. Cormac McCarthy's works, too, showing that which is coming up from under with the drug cartels, the film The Counselor being a case in point, but that which was not put in the film The Counselor or in his adaptation of his book, No Country for Old Men, is that that turns on abortion. If this is how we so casually treat human life, well, why not casually treat it to grown-up people? As I say, it would seem that the atheist writers are the most honest, the most prophetic. Strip the glamour away, and this is what you have. The market in souls now rendered plastic and inane. So what now? Well, to start at home, as it were, I want to move to Catholic education, because after all, this is what this series is touching upon. In his meeting with the Catholic educators in 2008, Benedict observed how education in the Catholic Church is one of, quote, its highest priorities. To teach freedom, but not freedom from essence, quote, it is not an opting out, it is an opting in, a participation in being itself. He goes on to say, this is contrary to, quote, giving way to cold, pragmatic calculations of utility, quote, contra rejecting metaphysics. And thus, he goes on to write, with confidence, Christian educators can liberate the young from the limits of positivism and awaken the receptivity to truth, contra, quote, the satisfaction of the individual's immediate wishes. Now, I want to suggest an approach that I think will enable Catholic education institutions to best serve what Benedict called for. And here I want to do, calling to mind Marshall McLuhan's well-known dictum, the medium is the message. The medium is the message. What is meant by that is this: the means by which we teach a subject will inevitably end up shaping that message, whether you like it or not. Our technology, for good or for bad, will shape what it is we teach. If we rely on computer technology, then what we teach will slowly but surely become shaped by the demands for ease, for friction-free learning, special effects, multimedia, immediacy of outcome, for a sense that we will be teaching an insubstantiality. If we use these virtual mediums, that is the message that will come across, virtuality. And let me assure you, the dumbing down across the board in universities is widespread. Everybody I know who has lectured and taught in universities knows what is going on. As one colleague at the Catholic Institute of Sydney, Matthew Del Nevo, put it, when with me he was opposing the increasing use of computers and online technology, as he put it, quote, if we Catholics do not believe in real presence, who will? The real presence of a lecturer, tutor to students, real presence of hard copy books and journals. And let me make this clear to you. If you think you can actually get a good education by beginning and learning from computers, you are wrong. Perhaps if you've gone through and you've done a master's and a doctorate, you can use that. But if you don't spend time with hard copy in libraries, you will not be doing a proper education. It is real presence, hard copy, solidity, not the stuff of fairyland. Without the materiality of matter, everything becomes insubstantial, easy, and dumbed down. That is the logic of the medium. And the fact that we have Catholic schools actually encouraging the use of iPads and so forth for primary school kids, those who do that should hang their head in shame, I think. They are complicit in our capitalist economy in fairyland. The real presence is what counts. And what we will find with this, if we don't have that, is a lack of intellectual discipline, a lack of rigor, such that we will lose the ability of critical analysis and succumb to the notion of education as entertainment, replete, as I say, with special effects. And everybody will become easy prey to the market's demands. In other words, education will be educating people to fall under the spell of glamour. We end up, in other words, no matter what we teach, we will end up teaching a form of Gnosticism, not the real substantial presence. We need solidity, gravity, the bearing of a load. There is no revolution without discipline. That is why fairyland is so powerful. It indulges you at every turn, lulls you to sleep, saps your will, and then when you wake up 50 years later, your life wasted in a virtual world of make-believe and entertainment. A Catholic education is not about indulging the passions, but of emulating the passion. A Catholic education is not about indulging the passions, it is about emulating the passion. It is not about ease, but the Via Dolorosa. The way of enchantment is a way full of friction. And this brings us another step closer to home, the cathedral. Again in his address to the Catholic educators, Benedict said, "To teach as a Catholic is, quote, is a question of conviction. Do we really believe that only in the mystery of the Word made flesh does the mystery of man become truly clear? Do we really believe that as Catholic educators?" Cathedrals tended to be built in the schematic shape of man, because the cathedral is built in the shape of a cross. It is the cross of Christ, our crucified Lord, that reveals both the true nature of man and God. Man in the image of God. Both are known, man and God, humanity and God, as John Paul, Benedict, and now Francis aver, in the giving of ourselves to others, in the mystery of renunciation and sacrifice. That is losing our life in order to gain our life. That, again, think upon all the great legends, myths, historical accounts. They turn on self-sacrifice, renunciation, discipline and perseverance, and yes, obedience. Here is our substance. Here is our freedom. The freedom of the quest that demands endurance, that challenges, that calls for perseverance. Here is solidity, gravity. Here is a beauty proper of thickness, density. Here is the materiality proper of matter. This is enchantment. This is definitely not fairyland. Today, there is much talk about Christian architecture, a desire for a new way to build, to go away from what was the awful secularized non-entity buildings. But the problem now is of people falling into nostalgic kitsch, and kitsch is bad faith, kitsch is evil, is pure sentimentality, and the obverse of that is viciousness. Nostalgia, the Bible does not do nostalgia, neither does the church. It must answer to our age. Architecture of the sacred must answer to the demands of our age. It must argue with our age. Now, the birth of Gothic architecture, the cathedrals, was an argument with its age. It was to counter a form of Gnostic views of materialism, or an antimatter, that it was trying to say there is a role for matter in transcendent worship. Gothic architecture showed how heavy, solid matter, rocks and stone, could, when oriented to serve God, could be infused with a supernatural lightness such that stone itself appears to lift up into the air to grasp God. That was the sense of Gothic architecture. It's a bit like what came a lot later in time, Baroque art in a Counter-Reformation. In that, it was trying to counter a gross materialism by showing how matter and flesh, when in ecstatic vision of God, would swell and well outwards in a kind of ecstatic expansion, showing how matter, how flesh, is good and can be transformed by reference to God. But is that the architecture for today? And I don't think so. Gothic replaced Romanesque. Now, the Romanesque style was heavy, grave, often almost a squat building. And I think that's what we need, a Romanesque turn, a sense of the solid, a staying put, heavy with gravity, even a kind of heavy ascetic style, something like modernist brutalism that often used to be said about Mies van der Rohe and Le Corbusier. Something like that, a modernist brutalism, but a new brutalism, certainly with cement, concrete, the pipes and the mechanics showing, only with images and icons. That's what we need. But with heavy and solid imagery of the saints, a brutalism that is sparse concrete adorned with heavy metals, even rusted iron, an iconoclastic not iconoclastic, but an iconodule, a love of the icons and images, but in a kind of heavy, grave, brutalistic fashion. And here, I think the work of Anselm Kiefer, an incredibly, one of the great contemporary installation artists, can aid in this. At the same time, it can be a grounded brutalism, a marrying of the brutalist architecture with what is called landscape architecture, what in the last 10, 20 years we've seen in architecture, in which you get heavy, very strong buildings shaping the architecture and being shaped, shaping the landscape and being shaped by the landscape, but not in some kind of merging way, but a melding way. And for those who might be interested, I think of things like Tadeo Ando's Gate of Creation, the University of Monterrey, Mexico, the Shenzhen Stock Exchange in China, Freedom Park in Pretoria, the Cabecera Park in Spain, the Perro Museum, I think in Dallas, and indeed the Royal Botanic Gardens down in Cranbourne, Victoria. Perhaps that's what we need, a brutalistic Romanesque that melds, not merges with the landscape, that transforms a world in which it is found, just as a cathedral ought to do, especially today in our hyper-capitalist world where everything is abstracted into values set by algorithms that speak to algorithms. And consequently, for many of you in the future, you will probably face ruin no matter what you do, because certain algorithms are working faster than anyone can comprehend, speaking only to other algorithms as they lose or make trillions of dollars. That's fairyland. In a world where nothing is certain, all is liquid, a cathedral ought to speak of another and another economy. And a Catholic education ought to teach another way of thinking. And the church give another way of being. For in the church, as in the architecture of the cathedral, the true nature of being is revealed. All finds its substance proper in the sinless and perfect humanity of our Lord, in his flesh and blood. In him, matter finds its perfection proper, its solidity proper. Matter finds its materiality proper by being joined through Christ's humanity to his divinity. And the church does this, and the cathedral presents it in the Eucharist, in real, not virtual presence. This is the antidote to neo-Gnosticism. This is the antidote that breaks the spell of fairyland. Catholic education should strive to emulate this real presence and thereby teach the generations the meaning of enchantment. In his post-synodal apostolic exhortation, Sacramentum Caritatis, 2007, Benedict XVI wrote of the Eucharist thus: it penetrates to the heart of all being. It is a change meant to set off a process which transforms reality, a process leading ultimately to the transfiguration of the entire world, to the point where God will be all in all. I'll finish there.
That was Dr. Robert Tilley. For more talks from Scholarship in the Cathedral, visit cradio.org.au.